This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, so today, rounds 2 and 3 of the NFL draft out in Las Vegas. Last night, round number 1. Yeah, there'll be nice storylines written about the first round, and we'll probably remember it as the time when there was really no quarterbacks that really dominated this draft. Kenny Pickett going to the Pittsburgh Steelers. He stays in Pittsburgh. There were a lot of, like, home picks in the draft. The Houston Texans took a kid out of Texas A&M, Kenyon Green, the offensive guard.
Played high school ball in Houston.
Played high school ball, yeah, exactly, in Houston. And then Ike Iguanu, the tackle from North Carolina State, is a Charlotte kid, and the Panthers selected him 6th overall. But as I was saying earlier, that's not really how this works. Like, you just don't take local kids to take local kids. You do if they're the best, if they're the best player, if they're the best player available. Now, you do want some familiarity. I don't want to discount that. I mean, if the Steelers are looking at all the quarterbacks and everything is equal, and they go, look, it doesn't really matter. We feel just as confident with Kenny Pickett as we do with Malik Willis. Then maybe you take Kenny Pickett because you are seeing him a lot more, right? You are seeing him in the building. It's funny. It's funny. I saw one analysis of the Steelers pick that said, oh, don't ever forget, they drafted Landry Jones because he threw 5 touchdowns at Heinz Field in a game when he was playing for Oklahoma State. Like, the Steelers don't tend to, like, leave to go scout, like, draft picks. But they if you're going to, again, it depends on how you grade the quarterbacks. If the Steelers had Kenny Pickett the highest, then they naturally take him. But if they didn't, but they had Malik Willis about the same, you are surrounded by people in the community that know this player, right? The Pitt Panthers play at Heinz Field. That's where their home games are. Their practice facilities are within the Steeler practice complex. And so you are in the building. You can just go down the right down the hall and talk to coaches, evaluate talent. You don't even have to leave, go on a plane or anything like that to see him day in and day out. So yes, especially on a local level, you know those kids a little bit more. You know those guys a little bit more. But in the end, that's not really how it works. You don't pick up local talent because you think local talent is somehow better for the organization. It's not college recruiting, for crying out loud. We'll get more thoughts on the draft, including the wide receivers and all of them that were picked and all of the way that position is changing as we continue at Sports Map Radio with Tony D and Ron Culver.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with 2 N's. How did your team do in round 1? If your team had a pick.
I felt good. I feel good about mine.
Yeah, you got an offensive lineman from Boston College.
Zion Johnson.
Right? Yeah, Zion Johnson.
Who, according to the pundits that were on the old telly that I was watching when I was watching Jeff,
yes,
did not allow a guy past him for a quarterback pressure.
Go. You know, it's funny that you just said telly, and I was wondering, does Sky Sports or the BBC, do they broadcast the draft? Given their deep interest now in the National Football League?
Yeah, because they have a big, deep interest, right?
Right, yeah. How many games do they get a year?
2.
They're only getting more than that? London? They only get 2?
I think they've only gotten 2.
They got like 3 or 4.
They just get 2.
Oh.
But I think soon they're only going to get 1. Or maybe we're just going to Germany extra.
Why are we stopping the London games?
No, it's not we're stopping. We're branching.
Right. I'm looking this up. London games 2022. Who's going to London? All right. So
Jacksonville.
All right. So who is playing in London in 2022? All right. So we got the Green Bay Packers. All right, Packers, Buccaneers, Cardinals, Jaguars, Saints. I think there's 3 games in London.
All right.
To play international games. Oh, no, international games.
International
no, there's going to be a game in Germany. Okay, so that's why. There's only going to be 2, and there's a game in Germany this upcoming season.
Yeah, and I don't think they're ready to go back to Mexico just yet.
So here are the games. They haven't released the schedule yet. So these are only the home teams, if you will. So Germany, it'll be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Mexico City, the Arizona Cardinals. They don't know their opponents because that'll be released in May when the full schedule comes out. The London games this year, two of them are at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, Green Bay and New Orleans, and then Wembley Stadium will have Jacksonville. So there's three games in London. That's still enough for the BBC to be interested in the draft, right? They just don't know who what they're talking about when they get to the draft.
I don't think that. No,
when
I don't
the
think
London
so.
Broadcasters are there.
I don't
Can you
think
imagine
that's...
like two London broadcasters arguing about Kenny Pickett?
Yes.
They'd be like, well, they're quite familiar with him. Well, don't you think? I mean, he practices in their own facility. I think that would make much more sense than a kid out of Liberty, whoever that is. Yeah. No, you don't
then
need
Then you
that.
Get the opposite guy. Yes, but he dropped in the draft like he was Bo Callahan.
Yeah, Bo Callahan dropped. He was starting to plummet. And if you look at the way the Steelers do this, they don't normally take quarterbacks, or at least that's what I was told doing my research. Yeah, I can only imagine. You know, because I'll tell you, the funny thing for me is when I watch Formula One racing on ESPN in the morning, on Sunday mornings, it is a Sky Sports broadcast. So it is out of England, English broadcasters, and they will promote what is coming up, right? So the announcer does that thing like when Jim Nantz goes, coming up on 60 Minutes tonight. They'll talk about things that are coming up throughout the day. And in the fall, it's NFL games. So they'll say, yeah, and today today our NFL games, we've got this game and this game that is coming up later today on Sky Sports. So it made me think as a broadcaster, how much staffing do you put into that coverage? Because, you know, a company like Sky Sports, they have a golf team. They have a football team, like a soccer group that covers that. And then they got this Formula One group that covers that. So they're, you know, darts. They cover darts. Do they have a group of English broadcasters whose job is it to do and talk NFL? Not carry the games. They're probably just carrying the NFL, CBS, NBC, whatever feed. But do they have a group that sits around a round table and talks about the NFL? So I think my overriding question, Ron, is how international was the draft broadcast?
Yes.
Yesterday.
I don't think it was. I don't think it was on any pubs in London, if that's what you're asking.
No, doesn't matter if anybody's watching.
Maybe it was
I'm
like in the background. Like, you know how somehow.
Coverage.
Yeah, but you know how somehow we show darts. Oh, you're talking about just cover. I don't think the BBC sent anybody.
Yeah, like, is it covered in London?
Yeah, I don't think
because they have an interest in the NFL.
I think Sky Sports was like, you know what? We'll just use our American affiliate.
Yeah.
And he can report on the draft and confuse us all.
Maybe that's the case. Yeah. Like, do they have embedded American broadcasters working for them trying to explain how the draft works? Do they have a draft in soccer? Primarily? Like,
no.
Do they go, now it's Liverpool's turn, and Liverpool goes, we're taking this player.
No, because you want to know the truth of it is that a lot of the players like are homegrown. Now, Liverpool has an academy, so they've been grooming this 14-year-old for years and decades, and he finally gets his chance to play for the first team.
But how did they get the 14-year-old?
They scouted him.
All right, so they scouted him and signed him, and they didn't have to wait their turn to pick him from a pool of players.
No.
Okay, so that makes my point.
Like someone like Messi, right? Messi was scouting. Messi was tearing it up in Argentina as a kid. Barcelona Academy was like, you know what? We should invite him over and come play with us. Messi's been living in Spain, I think, longer than he's lived in Argentina.
Okay, so now, that point is well taken, right? So imagine if, let's say, England, because they're like, we got three NFL games and we might actually get a team one day. Who knows? And then you go, all right. Well, here are some things the NFL does in its offseason that you, being NFL potential big-time NFL broadcasters, trying to deliver the game to the people of England, need to know. And one of it is the draft. Every April, we have a draft. And you go, what? Well, what? They go, what is that? And you go, okay. So you have a bunch of players that played in college, and they played college football. And then all the NFL teams get together, and based on how you finish the year before, there's a draft order. And then those people get to pick the players that they want to play. Do the players have a say in where they go? No, they don't.
Yeah, you want to know what the response would be? Why are you doing it that way? Why don't you just go out and just pay the most amount of money humanly possible to secure the player that you want?
Exactly. Exactly.
You pay the school and then pay the player.
So they go, so what if, let's say, one of the top players doesn't want to play for the Miami Dolphins? He has no choice.
Yeah.
He can't just play somewhere else, or he can't maybe just refuse to sign. Yep, he can refuse to sign, but he's not playing for anybody else.
He can pull an Eli Manning.
Right.
He can force the team to make a trade.
But the team still has to trade him. And they would probably go, what? Are we in the 18th century? What are we doing here? What are you talking about?
You know, they would probably be like, why won't the Dallas Cowboys just go and pay Michigan for Aiden Hutchinson?
The Cowboys are worth, what, $5 billion? Why don't they just go and buy every player they want?
Yeah.
It's not how it works. Why not? Don't know. this is just something we've just grown to accept.
I mean, do you remember, I can't remember which baseball player it was. There was someone coming out of Japan. I think the Red Sox won the sweepstakes.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
I
everyone
that,
was
yeah.
up in arms. It's like, you're paying the team how much? You're not even paying the player. You're paying the team?
Was it Matsuyama?
Was
the
it?
Pitcher? Hideki Matsuyama?
Maybe.
He had like the Bugs Bunny corkscrew ball. He was amazing.
Yeah. But what,
yeah, but I mean, they what paid else? The team a fortune just to get his
just
rights and
bid.
They paid him. Yeah, just to bid.
Just to have a chance of signing
That's
this
true.
Guy. I mean, there was no guarantee. They could have paid him, and the kid could have been like, nah, I never really thought of Boston as the place I want to go, so no.
Man.
But I remember the like all of like fans all across America were like, why are you paying the team?
It was Daisuke Matsuyama.
That's Daisuke.
Hideki Matsuyama was a hitter, I think. He played for the Yankees. No, Hideki Matsuyama was a golfer. He won the Masters. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Well, now we're gonna have to do some research.
Daisuke Matsuyama was the Red Sox pitcher.
Matsuyama.
Daisuke Matsuyama.
Oh,
what are we doing?
We're terrible.
Why did you get me on this? Now I'm flaming out. He had a wicked pitch, and you're right. It was Theo Epstein at the time went out there and paid a boatload of money to the Japanese team to do that. All right, let's get off.
So
there was
Hideki Matsui.
Hideki Matsui was the Yankee player.
Daisuke Matsuzaka.
Matsuzaka.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's he had the Bugs Bunny corkscrew pitch. Yeah. 1, 2, 3 strikes are out. 1, 2, 3 strikes are out. 1, 2, 3 strikes are out.
He was catching him at the same time.
And catching, exactly. All playing all the positions. What's the score, Buzz? What would Bugs Bunny do? Yeah, it's so there you go. But yeah, back to the point. I think if you were to explain the draft to an international broadcasting crew, they'd probably go, what? This is how it works? Yeah, it's how it works. You have no choice. You have to play for the Arizona Cardinals if you want to play in the league or the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Like, what if they don't want to live there? Too bad.
I mean, they would seriously question, why is the last place team always picking first?
Yeah. And then they would ask the next question, which is, does any other industry in your country outside of sports do it this way? Nope. They're like, really? Yeah, no, if you graduate as a doctor, you can work anywhere you want if they'll hire you. You don't have to be locked into a certain, there's not a doctor draft, all right? A lawyer draft. You go where you want to go. If they hire you, they hire you. And if another company that wants to hire you, you can choose. They're like, oh, you Americans are so weird. I'm like, yeah, we do. And they're like, and people love this. They go, they not only love it, it's one of the most valuable things we have in sports is picking college players in the draft. It is that cool. I mean, you watched it last night. We all watched it last night. You can't get what they had last night and every year that they've taken this on the road. You can't get that kind of enthusiasm No. If people did not like this. Like, no, if people were like, nah, it's just, it's kind of boring and stupid and silly, but it's part of the deal of being a fan. No, people genuinely love it so much they make pilgrimages to these places to watch it.
Because you want to know what they do all around the world. If you're the bottom three teams, you're not even part of the top teams top flight anymore.
Exactly.
You're gone. You're history.
So what do you do with Jacksonville? We give them the best player they possibly can get coming out of college.
The best chance to be good again.
We give them an easy schedule. Then we give them the best player they possibly can get. Not only the best player in round one, but round two as well. And we limit everybody else's spending so that they can't be outspent, so they can pursue free agents as well.
Here's an idea.
How fair.
Here's an idea. You know what? The USFL needs to succeed, and so does the XFL. Because how great would it be? Who are the bottom three? It was Jacksonville, Detroit, and Houston, right?
Right.
Relegate the three of them, promote Birmingham Stallions, New York Generals, or New Jersey
Generals.
Move them
up into the league.
Move them up into the NFL.
Yeah, give them their fair shot. At this,
resurrect the AAFL. Have all the Houston Roughnecks. They would have been they would have secured their top flight. And why not have two teams from Houston?
Yep.
Why can't you? Right.
So here's the deal. What did we learn from this segment? Ron and I are trying to revamp the entire process of the NFL, and we have no idea if you're a Japanese athlete, where you went, or who you played for, or what your name was. Sorry, Dice K. I should have remembered Dice K. He was really good.
Yeah.
I'm surprised my brain forgot. Good old Dice K.
But Hideo Nomo.
Hideo Nomo pitched a no-hitter in Colorado.
Yes, he did.
You want to talk about witchcraft and sorcery? That's literally impossible. impossible.
I mean, he should be in the Hall of Fame for that.
Without question. Like, you don't know. I'm going to get on a tangent here. Sorry, but this is the way it goes. You brought up Hideo Nomo. People don't understand at that Coors Field how big it is. It has got they built it so because of the altitude, they built it slightly bigger, because to just handle the fly balls that go a little further there in the altitude. And because they did that, it creates larger real estate in the outfield. There's a lot more ground to cover. And so that's why the scores were really he pitched a no-hitter there. Throwing practically a cue ball with no humidity. Unbelievable. It's one of the greatest pitching performances of all time. It's amazing. It's amazing. All right, Tony D, Ron Culver, Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, so again, Trevor Sikkema is going to join us from Pro Football Focus coming up in 10 minutes, so we'll get his thoughts on the draft. Again,
that's not your fault, by the way.
Why? Because we never had him before?
No, well, because we didn't have him before. But we just had a whole segment where we just butchered names.
That's right. That's all we did.
So,
yeah.
It's not your fault. We're don't give us any names anymore.
I'm so sorry, Masters champion Hideki Matsuyama, that I thought you were a Red Sox pitching prospect in the early aughts.
He could have been. You don't know.
My goodness.
He might have been a pitcher and a golfer.
That's right. All to make the point of how the Red Sox went and had to pay a team a bunch of money just to talk, to negotiate with him, with Dice K.
How about this? You want a little trivia? Because I went down the rabbit hole of Japanese baseball players.
Right.
How about this fun one, right? Can you name me, out of all the great Japanese baseball players that have came over recently, and I'm not talking like, back when, but, recently, you probably won't because you'll butcher the name, but name the first Japanese player to hit a home run in Major League Baseball.
I don't know.
Hideo Nomo.
Hideo Nomo was the first Japanese player to hit a home run?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's the only reason why I brought that up. I was like, I just saw that. I'm like, that
I
is
was
surprising.
I was thinking that it,
like
maybe
Hideki
it was
Matsui
some point,
or
yeah,
Ichiro
but I thought
Suzuki.
Maybe somewhere in the 80s, there was one Japanese player that played a couple of games and hit a home run.
Yeah, but the first one to hit a home run was Hideo Nomo. Yeah. Pitcher Hideo Nomo.
Yeah, it's funny. It's really interesting about that because years and years ago, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine, and he was a big baseball fan. And he was talking about how baseball was changing, like, with pitchers, like there were all these good pitchers. And he's talking about the mound And he said, because it was, remember they kind of tinkered with the mound a little bit? They lowered it and whatnot. And so it produced, like, whatever they did, either they raised or they lowered it, whatever it would be to benefit the pitchers. And I remember telling him, I was like, I think you're missing a larger point here. It's not so much the mound. The game is now so international that your talent pool has grown considerably. Like, you're now finding people around the world that can do this and where they're playing baseball. And teams are now investing in finding people in Australia that can pitch, for crying out loud. There was Graham Lloyd, was a pitcher from Australia. You were getting, you know, Japanese players. You were getting, you know, people in Latin America that would, you know, obviously that talent pool has always been there, but now that was growing. And I said, that's when you know, like, you know, you're reaching internet, when you're growing the game so much that you can reach on an international level to where that is. That's where the NFL doesn't have that, because football isn't played anywhere else. Like, it's here, and that's it. You know, we're not plucking, you know, kickers you can get, right? Punters, kickers, but you're not going to find a quarterback in you know, Italy throwing the ball, slinging it around for some local, you know, college there. So that's why I think that in terms of, you know, one of the reasons I think what we saw last night is, like, the NBA, there's a lot of international players that people never hear of. So they have to take the team's word for it. They have to go, yeah, all right. I remember my first draft with the covering the Nuggets. Nikola Skitashvili was a pick by the Nuggets. I think he was picked in the fifth overall pick. And we didn't know him. You know, we never heard of him, right? We weren't astute with our international players. And so the general manager of the Nuggets, you know, had to explain it to us. They had to explain why he was selected and whatnot. Luka Doncic, for those who really know, they know, right? For those who really, really know the international basketball scene, who is out there. And this goes all the way back into the, you know, 90s, right? You know, with a number of players that have come over from Europe. But in the NFL, every one of these kids is a college player in the United States. They didn't grab somebody from England or somebody from France or somebody from anywhere else. And so you feel a little bit more connected. There feels like you can really, really analyze as a fan. Now imagine if you're a Dallas Mavericks fan and they draft Luka Doncic and you've never heard of him and you're mad about that pick. How embarrassed are you today? He's a superstar. Nikola Jokic, same thing. If you're a Nuggets fan and you got Nikola Jokic on your team, and you're like, "Hey, who's that? I've never heard of him. I guess he's good. They know what they're doing." That's, you don't hear people say that. Like, you hear people really prepare for this as fans. You see people really diving in. You can go on Twitter or Facebook, and you can say, you can see, like, okay, I may not have watched Ahmad Gardner, Sauce Gardner, out of Cincinnati, except, you know, when they went to the playoff. If I live in New York, I'm not watching Cincinnati Bearcats football.
Yeah.
But I, if I'm a Jets fan, it is not that hard to find exactly who he is, what he is, and what people have been saying about him, right? It's not that difficult to really, really have seen his progression in the college football world. And you may have heard of him because they did make the college football playoff. Now, the Giants, you know, Kayvon Thibodeau, I wouldn't fault anybody in the greater New York area for not knowing anything about this guy. He plays for Oregon. You know, Pac-12 After Dark is appealing, but it ain't appealing to everybody, right? So other than what you were hearing about the buzz of this guy, you may not have know exactly what an amazing athlete he is, how powerful he is at rushing and the quarterback and getting to the quarterback and his ability to get off the edge. It's incredible. He should have been the number one overall pick. He was being talked about as the number one overall pick. But what you're getting this morning, everyone in New York is excited because Wink Martindale, the defensive coordinator, has got a scheme that this guy is going to fit in perfectly. So you didn't have to watch 1 second of this kid to feel like you got something. Why? Because he plays here and no one's trying to sell you Kayvon Thibodeau. Because Kayvon Thibodeau has established himself enough in this country that if you're not even paying attention to Pac-12 football, you at least knew that coming out of the offseason, he was one of the top names to be on top of the board in the draft, and the Giants get him at 5. Got to feel like you got a steal, right? Garrett Wilson, Ohio State wide receiver for the Jets, it's another A-plus pick. can't stress how good the New York teams did in this draft. They really knocked it out of the park. You hope there's something on the other end of this, right? You would hate three, four years from now, both of these teams are still in the basement because they couldn't get other things fixed with the talent they got on Thursday night. All right, well, let's continue as we roll along with the draft.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's go out to our progressive guest line. Trevor Sikkema is joining us, Pro Football Focus, on the first round of the NFL Draft. How are you, Trevor?
I'm doing great, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
Well, let's start with the New York teams. Five picks combined between the Giants and the Jets. A lot of people have graded them very well. How did you grade all of those selections that the New York teams had last night?
I thought they were great. And look, anytime you've got multiple picks in the first round, it's kind of a cheat code for grades, right? Because you're increasing how much you probably like your haul unless you're picking players that are massive reaches, which yeah. I don't think either of these teams did. I love the haul by the New York Giants. I know they really wanted to trade back with one of those selections. I know that Joe Shane, the general manager there, was looking to move back, try to get some capital from next year's draft, but it just didn't see, as we saw the night evolve, didn't seem like any team was willing to give up future capital. They'd move stuff later in this draft, but they didn't really want to dip into 2023. And so once that was the case, the point of the draft is to pick good players that you need. And Joe Shane did exactly that at 5-7 by staying put. And then, of course, what the Jets were able to do. I thought they did a great job navigating what this draft was going to hold for them. And what I say by that is they came up with a draft strategy that really seemed to work. Once Derek Stingley went off the board at number 3 overall, they were kind of sitting in a situation where they go, hey, we've got a cornerback need. We've heard lately over the last 72, 48 hours that a lot of corners are going to go in the first round of this draft. So you can't really wait on one for the early second round, maybe like we planned before. So you take Sauce Gardner off the board at number 4. You go get a wide receiver you absolutely love, still near the top of the class at number 10, and then they get aggressive to go get their edge rusher, still with faith in Mekhi Becton on the offensive side. So I love it because both of those teams went in with a draft strategy and came out with very strong results. Really good process from both of those New York teams.
There were obviously trades to move up in this draft. There were a number of teams that did that. I didn't feel that there was the big move. Did you get a feeling any team did that on Thursday night?
Well, I think that, the Lions certainly did, moving from 32 to 12. I did not expect that to happen.
And right, that's probably the only one, right?
Right, and essentially, I mean, they gave up the 34th overall pick. That's it? They gave up the 34th overall pick to move up 20 spots. That's pretty unheard of. Saints, when they traded up for Marcus Davenport, they had to give up a future first-round pick to move up 13 spots. So, man, it never would have saw that coming from the Lions. Anytime there was a trade-up, I looked at teams like the Green Bay Packers at 28, the Kansas City Chiefs at 29, and while a lot of people said, oh, they're a prime candidate to trade up, I said to myself, yeah, but are they really going to get into the teens? Because that's a hefty price that you might have to pay. Sure enough, the Lions go all the way back from 32 up to 12, go get Jameson Williams, and it didn't cost them that much. So loved it from Brad Holmes.
We do have years where a certain position is sort of dominant in the draft. Some years we were loaded with quarterbacks, some years, but this year it was wide receiver. But let's try to go big picture here, if you can. Is there something going on within the collegiate game that is producing these kind of players that they are getting drafted this high in the draft?
Well, it's not just collegiate players. It's high school as well. The whole culture of football is changing. It's not this ground-and-pound game anymore. It's just not. We're seeing that even in high school football, you're spreading things out. You're going 4 or 5 wide receiver wide. 7-on-7 camps with no trench play have become more prevalent than ever, and you're just developing more wide receivers. There's more of a demand to get more wide receivers onto the field in high school. Therefore, there are more wide receivers who are polished and better at their craft going into the colleges. There's more to pick from, there's more to recruit, and then there's more to play once you get there. We're seeing air raid and spread also be pretty prevalent in college football over the last couple of years, lighting up scoreboards left and right. And because of that, the pool of players at wide receiver is not only deep, but polished and talented. So a lot of these guys who maybe in a different era would have grown up and played running back, played safety, played corner, played linebacker, whatever it is, they're playing wide receiver. They're sticking with wide receiver at a young age, and that's the position that they're playing, and that's what they're getting picked to be in the NFL. So it's just, I think it's always going to be a deep position moving forward because that's where the landscape of football is.
It is a good time to be a wide receiver in this league. Obviously, now they're making $30 million a year, but it seems like just on an economic standpoint, if you have a deep position, if you can do what Tennessee did, which is just take a guy that is getting ready to get out of his deal, get ready to get paid, and you don't have to pay that one because you can match that level with somebody in the draft. If more teams do it, less and less are going to get $30 million, correct? Or am I missing the economics?
No, it's going to be a fascinating development what we see with wide receivers over the last couple of years because, you know, you look at what the Tennessee Titans did last night. Yeah, it helps their checkbooks. Does it help their wins?
Sure.
I don't think it does, right? Because
right.
the Titans just got the number one overall seed last year. All of a sudden, I'm looking at that roster and I'm thinking this is massive regression here from the Titans, and they can maybe go to sleep at night thinking that their books are a little bit more solid. They've got a little bit more cap space, but why do you have cap space? You have cap space to pay good players. That's what you have it for. And I feel like there's just always going to be a balance between that kind of a strategy, not drafting wide receivers. I mean, shoot, I was reading all sorts of reports leading up to the draft of, hey, I know it's deep. A wide receiver could go later than you think. These teams don't necessarily want to pay a premium because there's so many wide receivers out there. And all we're seeing instead is wide receivers getting paid $25 million a year left and right, and all those receivers going in the top 20 of the draft last year. So you would think in theory the market is going to shift to where you're a little bit slower on paying wide receivers, slower on drafting premium guys, but that is absolutely not the case right now.
Yeah, let's point out that the two guys that did get moved yesterday both got really nice deals from their landing spots. So it really, you're absolutely right. On one hand, people are like, yeah, I don't have to do this. And then other teams are like, but we'll be more than happy to do that for you. So I want to ask you about Kenny Pickett of the Steelers. The quarterback class wasn't as hyped up as it was last year. Nevertheless, he is a first-round pick by the Steelers who are looking for the next franchise quarterback. Are the Steelers reaching a little bit with this guy? I know he's a local guy, so it does make a little bit of sense, but Malik Willis was on the board. People did like Desmond Ridder. Was this a little bit of a reach by the Steelers?
Yeah, Malik Willis was on the board and is still on the board. That's
yes,
what's crazy
that's right.
to me. And you know, we looked at this situation where I think everybody went into this quarterback class, and when I say everybody, I mean people who were evaluating this class, and they looked at the quarterbacks and they said to themselves, oh, man, it's not a good year. It's not a good year. A lot of people didn't even have first-round grades on any quarterback in this class, but we knew the NFL was going to be different. We thought to ourselves, okay, yeah, but the NFL is going to draft these quarterbacks, so we projected 2, 3, even 4 into the first round, and it turns out the NFL thought like the media did, that not a lot of these guys were worth it. In fact, only one was worth a first-round pick. I think it is extremely telling that not only did Kenny Pickett not go as QB1 until number 20 overall, but no team traded back into the first round to go get one of these guys and that fifth-year option on their contract. I think that's extremely telling. But in terms of Kenny Pickett, he was not who I expected to be the first quarterback off the board. If you're going to take a chance on one of these guys, I would have taken a chance on a guy who's got a little bit higher of a ceiling. I get the hometown effect with the Steelers. It seems like they were leaning into that pretty hard. It's not the pick that I would have made. And not that Kenny Pickett is a terrible quarterback. I don't think that. But I think his ceiling is limited. And certainly for a team like the Steelers that already has Mitchell Trubisky on the roster, who I think is going to be very serviceable for them, how much better do I believe Kenny Pickett's going to be the Mitch Trubisky? I'm not convinced it's going to be a whole lot. So that's why I felt like they would have taken a little bit bigger of a swing at a home run with a guy who had a little bit higher of a ceiling than Kenny Pickett. But in the end, they ended up going with the hometown guy who doesn't have to move too far because he played
yeah.
the same stadium in college.
And it doesn't feel like the organization, and again, things can change, but it doesn't feel like the Steelers organization is like Arizona, which is you get Josh Rosen and then you bring in a new coach who likes Kyler Murray better. They will ride with Kenny Pickett for a little bit, but if the draft class is better next year, maybe the Steelers were better off trying to find the franchise quarterback that year, let Mitch Trubisky do his thing, and find the better quarterback in year two.
And that was sort of, you know, that was kind of the strategy of, okay, well, then why are you spending 20 overall on Kenny Pickett? And look, something that I liked with the Pittsburgh Steelers is everybody knew they needed a QB. And anytime that's the case, it's dangerous, right? Because a lot of people, they'll demand a higher price for a trade. They won't really want you to move because they know how desperate you're going to be. The position is so important. The Steelers got out of this draft with the guy that I guess they believe is QB1 by staying at 20,
right,
not having to move capital for next year to go up and get their guy. And I think that that is definitely important because it at least opens the door for them to maybe get Kenny Pickett in there. If he has a great year, okay, great. But if he doesn't, then they can wait and maybe dip into the quarterback class next year, like you said.
I used to joke about how doing this for a while, I used to get calls from people that would say, like, you know who should be the number one pick? There's a running back from Chadron State you've never heard of. And I'd go, oh, okay, I get it. You're trying to be the smartest guy in the room. But Cole Strange out of Chattanooga, is Bill Belichick still trying to be the smartest guy in the room? How do you make sense of this?
Look, I said this on my podcast last night. That's the most wild pick of the night. No question. It's not even close. But who am I to question the greatest head coach of all time, right? So that is the big caveat in it all is you look at who made the pick. If any other team makes the pick, I think we are nationally killing it.
I agree completely.
Them this morning. But I think that everybody has to go, wow, that was a crazy pick. But it's Belichick, right? And Cole Strange, fantastic athlete, incredible athlete. You look at what he was able to do, his movement skills, unbelievable from Tennessee Chattanooga. So you love that kind of stuff. You think you're getting a really good football player, and the Patriots have developed developed offensive line very, very well over the last couple of years. Now, a lot of people would say that's the tip of the cap to Dante Scarnecchia, who was their longtime offensive line coach, who is no longer there. But you figure that the principles and the systems and everything are hopefully still in the building. And so, look, if Cole Strange was going to go to any team in the NFL and really validate being a first-round pick, I would have to say the Patriots are one of them.
Trevor, great stuff, man. Good conversation. Thank you so much for getting up early on a busy day and joining us. I appreciate it.
Oh, of course, guys. Draft week, we don't sleep too much, so
right.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Trevor Sigma again, Pro Football Focus. Good stuff. On our Progressive guest line, Progressive Insurance, bundle and protect today under one roof. Learn more at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. We'll come back, wrap up the show as we get ready on a draft weekend now as we go into rounds 2 and 3 on Friday and then the rest this weekend. It's Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks to Trevor Sikkim on a Progressive guest line. I'm talking NFL draft again. Rounds 2 and 3 tonight, rest of the weekend, all 7 rounds.
How much will you watch tonight?
I'll watch a little bit. Yeah, the second and third rounds are intriguing to me. I sort of lose a little steam in the fourth round.
Yeah.
They go a little too quick. Like, when you reach a point in the broadcast where they're just like, oh, okay, the Cowboys, Ravens, and Bengals all picked. Here they are.
Yeah, or they're focusing on, here's what the Bengals did at 157.
Yeah.
And then you look at the ticker and like, well, we're at 162 now. What happened?
Exactly. But the second and third round are kind of big.
It's still done the same way. I mean,
it's
a little bit faster.
A little faster, but it's still done the same way. So, yeah, tonight should be interesting. And then the weekend, here's how it works at my house. Really watch Thursday, have Friday night watch it, and then Saturday is just on. Like, oh, I'll be doing things around the house. We have a yard sale going on Saturday.
Ooh.
I know.
Got anything good? I might swing by.
I don't know. But, you know, if you came a couple of years ago, you could have gotten a beautiful set of Ben Hogan Apex Tour irons for $25.
Wow.
A whole set.
Did you get
three
fleeced?
Iron all the way through sand wedge. Yeah. My wife, I had gotten new clubs, but I kept the old clubs.
Just in
case. I said, you know, I got new clubs. And I was like, these ones, I think I'll probably sell. So my wife said, well, price them. And I didn't price them. And I slept on the thing. And a guy came by and was like, hey, you're selling those clubs? And she goes, yeah. He goes, how much? And she goes, I don't know, $25.
He couldn't get the money out fast enough.
I told her, I said, that's. It was like 200 easily. I was like, this was 3 iron all the way through sand lob wedge with a sand wedge and a gap wedge. And it was like a full iron set. She sold for $25.
No bag, right? No bag?
No, she gave it was a bag.
Oh, the bag too.
It was a Heineken promotional golf bag,
God.
But it was a cheap one that we got at an event. But she
yeah,
had
but
that
I mean,
too.
I mean, at least the carry, you know.
Basically throw a putter, driver, and three wood in there, and you got a complete set for $25.
God, I mean, that guy probably was like, wait, well, how much? The wife will be okay with this. Yeah, you know, I'm trying to get some money out fast enough, and probably
forged irons. I mean, these things were great. I mean, these weren't cheap. I mean, that was my, I was like, all right, $25. But she said to me, she said, I told you to price these things. You're not pricing them, I'm pricing them. And if I price them, that's what you get.
Yeah.
So I said, you know what? You're right. I was too lazy. I should have said, this is what I want, you know. So, but $200 at a yard sale, I think is a little much. I wouldn't have I probably would have put them online or something like that. Hey, real quick, Freol deep penetrating oil delivers 3 times more lubricant, takes less spray, less torque, and less time than any other penetrating oil to get the job done. It's also body shop safe, which means it's safe on paint, plastic parts, it's silicone free. And it's on the shelves at O'Reilly, AutoZone, Napa, and select Walmart stores. Whether it's the corroded U-bolts or axle nut removal or seized engines or getting a hose off a power washer like I used it for last weekend, Freol Deep Penetrating Oil gets the job done. Freol Deep Penetrating Oil, give it a try. We know you'll like it. All right, so that is going to be my weekend. Yard sale Saturday, daughter's prom on Saturday as well. So there you go.
No baseball this weekend. Just the two younger ones have soccer games on Saturday.
Yay.
So this is the opportunity. My wife and I have already discussed on Sunday. We're going to try to do as much as we can to our backyard to kind of get it ready for summer.
Yep, that's exactly right. Good for you.
Redo the deck a little bit that we have in the backyard. You know, cut some dead branches that we just haven't gotten around to because kids' sports suck up all our time.
No kidding. Man, it's amazing.
It is.
Yeah, it's crazy. All right, thanks for joining us. We'll be back Monday. We'll have more look at the draft, NBA playoffs going on this weekend as well. The NHL playoffs will be starting next week, too. And don't forget, also next Saturday, a week from Saturday, the Kentucky Derby is going to be run. So there's a lot to talk about. The Kentucky Derby's been a mess the last couple races. Remember, they had the change in the order. They didn't run it. They had Bob Baffert's controversial horse. There's a lot of last couple of years for that Derby has been kind of... Enjoy the draft, everybody. We'll be back Monday.